Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. This show airs every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/maxine.htm. And now here's your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. You can find me at MaxineThompsonBooks.com and MaxineThompson.com. I'm the author of The Ebony Tree, award-winning Hostage of Lies, short story collection A Place Called Home, and latest novel, L.A. Blues. I'm a contributor to best-selling anthologies, Secret Lovers, Never Knew Love Like This Before, All in the Family, and Proverbs for the People. All books are available nationwide or at my website, or you can get them on Kindle. I also have the Hush Hush Secrets of Writing Fiction That Sells and the Hush Hush Secrets of Making Money as a Writer on Kindle. Tonight's guest is Mondale Pope. He's a return guest, and he's now a national best-selling author of trilogy, Both Sides of the Fence. He just released his latest book, Both Sides of the Fence, subtitled Loose Ends. Good evening. How are you, Mondale?
How you doing, Ms. Thompson? I'm doing good.
That's great. Yes. So you just before the show, you were saying people are wanting book four.
Right. It was kind of messing me up in my head. Every time you think you end it, and I didn't end with a cliffhanger, people just, they said they like the characters. They can't let go of the characters.
Well, what made you write a part three to Both Sides of the Fence?
Well, you know, after I got to know and finished the part two, you kind of alluded to the fact that I still had some stuff left over and some unanswered questions. So I talked to a couple of my reader friends that I actually throw ideas at, and we kind of got a story idea together, and I went from there, and it worked.
Good. Please give a brief excerpt, and then I'd like you to read an excerpt from the book. I mean, give a synopsis of the book, and then, read an excerpt after you give a synopsis.
Okay. Both Sides of the Fence 3 is Loose Ends. This book was actually, after my first two books, the adults were, they were kind of finished with the drama, the main characters in my first two books, so I actually decided to see what the two children that they had would get into. They moved off to California, and some minor characters in my second book made a major appearance in this new one, along with two new characters. And the story came together. It's mainly about how one person's secret can affect just more than just themselves and people around them, even if it's across the country or anything like that. So that was basically the premises. The Loose Ends was kind of like, wasn't my first title. I actually went with something called Generations, but that didn't come across as catchy. So everybody went with Loose Ends, and it actually worked.
Yes, because you tied up a lot of the loose ends from the other book.
So. Yes. And I personally, I didn't, like I said before, at the end of book two, I didn't think that it needed a part three. I thought, personally, once you, I don't want to give away secrets, but once you kill off a main character, you're like, I'm finished. That was it. But that wasn't the truth because I had left a little bit of things unanswered. And actually gave me a chance to actually bring the novels full circle. You actually get to see some minor characters actually in my book one that's in this book as well.
Right. That's really good that you went on and did this trilogy, because now people read all three books, and that's building your fan base as well.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, well, could you read an excerpt for us from this book?
Sure. I'm going to be reading from Chapter 2. It's a small section. It's one of my new characters. Her name is Grace. And this is going to be a little piece. Hello? I whispered into my cell phone. My husband was snoring so loud in the bed that you would have thought we had sex 12 times. He didn't even move when I got out of the bed and grabbed my terry cloth robe off the end of the bed. I walked down my stairs with a lot on my mind. I was glad Ashley wasn't on the phone, but I wasn't completely happy about who was on the phone. I walked down the hallway into my kitchen to get as much privacy as I could. I didn't trust David, even though he was asleep. All sleeping eyes weren't always sleeping. I knew that from experience, but that's another story for another time. Hello, Mother. I was a little annoyed that she would call me at this late at night. Is everything okay? No, everything is not fine. She sounds annoyed, too. My only child left on this earth has not called me in a while. I know, Mama. I'm sorry. I just have been busy, you know. I have a very time-consuming job. So that's your excuse now, huh? Work. She sat down on my excuses for not coming to visit her every time she called. I had an excuse for every call. This was our relationship now. This is what it had come to. Look, Ma, my tone was stern. I don't want to do this. What do you mean this, she said. The arguing that we do every time that you call me. I sighed. I have enough stress as it is. Your stress is because you don't want to be upfront with yourself. You don't know how to figure others out. Forgive others as well, especially family. She confirmed what I already knew. I can't tell you enough how sorry I am for the way things turned out. What more do you want from me? What more? I could hear the pain in her voice. Sorry, Ma. I'm sorry. I broke down and started to sob. You're right. Mama knows that already, she spoke assuredly. I don't do anything right, but I did get some stuff right. I know it because you are successful and you made me proud. I needed to hear those words. She never said she was proud of me. Baby, how's your husband doing? She spoke sarcastically, casting my mood downward again. He's a very happy man, very happy indeed. Mm-hmm, I bet. Another sarcastic remark flew out of her mouth. So when am I going to meet him? You know, face to face. Soon, Mama, soon. Don't you think it's been long enough? What are you ashamed of, she asked. I'm ashamed of nothing, I lied to her and myself. He's a very busy man. His free time is limited. So we still playing Russian roulette, huh? She laughed. Baby, remember, as a child, you were never good at playing games. Remember, life is not a game. It plays for keeps. Don't I know, I spoke lightly, more to her than to me. I was just calling to check on you, my child. She was now speaking sweetly. And your secrets. Talk to you soon. Okay, Ma, I hung up the phone. My mind raced a mile a minute. She acted like all of this was my fault when she knows she had a hand in it. I love my mother like a child should love their mother. I pay her bills and all, but I also had great resentment towards her. I just don't know how to deal with it. I went back upstairs, climbed into bed, and fell asleep as soon as my head hit the pillow. Mm. Finished.
Mm, yeah, when they find out that secret, it's going to blow their mind.
Right.
Came back to me. Oh, my goodness. So yes. Many people. Undercover in this book.
Right. She was actually, you know, Grace was, she was the one who was, I got like a note from Carl Weber one time when I was talking to him about his books. He said you can always kind of make up new characters or bring in family that you don't talk about if you don't talk about them. And she was one of them. Mm-hmm. And she's actually, a lot of my readers, she's their favorite character now.
Wow. Yeah, she was very interesting. Really, you had a lot of foils throughout this book where they were the exact mirrors, like even the twins.
Right.
Ashley and her brother, they were foils to each other. They were very different.
Yes, yes, ma'am.
And you talked about family secrets, even family reunions. There was a lot of things going on
right.
in this book.
I actually, I like this book because I actually like my first book was more about molestation and the down low kind of thing, and I thought I covered it pretty well. And then my second book was actually more about generational curses and family secrets. And with this book right here, I kind of wanted to touch on a lot of people don't know that you have a lot of serial killers out, but you also have serial molesters. and people don't know that, and that's what I wanted to cover in this book. Uh-huh. And I think I did a good job. This book was a little harder for me because it's about 7 points of view in here almost, and bringing everything together was crazy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I see you got 3 5 stars reviews on Amazon already, and the book just came out the first of the month.
Yes, ma'am.
10, so that is great. I remember before they would say they love the story, but the editing and this and that, but now, and
right.
Even then, they were reading it and eating it up, and they were flying off the shelves.
Yes, ma'am. That was just the first book. Actually, everything got a whole lot better with the second and the third.
Right. The second and third, the editing got much better. And then your writing has improved tremendously.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people tell me, too. Even I still have a little bit of issues with my grammar. But I guess if you don't have some kind of flaw, you stay grounded, stay rooted, so you won't think that you just got it made.
Well, but did you encounter any hardships while you were writing this book?
This book actually took place. I kind of took a risk when I wrote this one because the first two books were actually in Baltimore, Maryland, and like in the suburbs of Baltimore and Maryland. And this one actually was written in California as a backdrop. And I don't live in California. So I had to use a lot of MapQuest and Google this. And I have a writer friend that actually lives in California, so she would help me with street names and, you know, like logistics of the area, what neighborhood was this way, how this neighborhood was, and so I can get, financial climate of the neighborhoods where I can't have a character who's a teacher living in a right there neighborhood. I need to know which neighborhood was which, what was good, what was bad, so I can match the subject up. So, people want to call me out.
Yeah. And you know, in California, we have an invisible grid map of who's the Bloods and the Crips and which neighborhood you're at.
Right, right.
That's what I'm doing with L.A. Blues. Yeah, I know. Okay, it's the Hoover Trades over here. There's 8 Tray over there. Oh, my God. I'm telling you. And then we got all these other gangs from El Salvador.
Yes, ma'am.
Asian, we got more. This is Gang City for those who are, for people who are inclined to be in a gang, they could find one here.
Yes, ma'am.
So you have to kind of know even that when you're writing about California, and even when you're in the areas, you got to know what you can wear and why people don't wear red and certain areas and why you don't wear
blue. I don't even do that here, but.
Oh, boy, it's something. Well, what was the most challenging part when it came to the actual writing, besides the research, but the writing?
It was the discipline. Like I said, when I started it, and it's always hard when you first start a book. I had Ashley's character, Pig. I wasn't quite sure how I was going to do Alex's character when I... Because from your notes before and my edits, he was kind of vague. So I had to feel him out. Like, he had some of my characteristics as a teenager. So it was kind of easier as I kept on writing. I think filling out the characters' voices and making each one of them distinct was challenging. Even though I think I did a really good job, and I had someone actually ask me how did I make their voices and their characters so different, where none of them were the same, but they all were impacting the story. And I don't have an easy answer for that. It's just, I guess, sometimes some people say, as a writer, you got a couple people in your head. I guess these some of those people that were talking to me in my head or something like that. I fell in love with some of them, some of the situations they were going through. I had to actually, sit back and think. This story didn't just come to me, right away. So I had to sit and write and erase and write and go back in again and write again. And then sometimes I would take a week off just to, let my mind rest so I wouldn't write in just anything.
How How long did it take you to write this one?
Actually, believe it or not, I actually had started another book before this because I didn't even really get a good idea. Like, I finished this book with the second book, I finished the edits in, like, November, and I had already started another book. So my mind was already set on something else. So I had to kind of stop and think about this. I didn't start this one until, like, 3 months later, I think, because I really wasn't sure if I was going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Did you get the book deal offer for it? Is that what made you decide to go on and write this one? Because a lot of times those deadlines will make you go on and write.
Right. I had to make my mind up because I wasn't really sure. I went back and forth. So I was like, all right, in January, I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. I think it took me, the book was, I took me up until November. It's like, what, 8 months? Maybe 9? To actually, like, get it all done and look at it and like it. And that was even before the edits. Yeah, I think it was about 9 months.
But that's good because a lot of books you can write fast, but some you have to write slow. And some are kind of pre-writing in your head before you actually put it on paper.
Right, that's true. I mean, I actually like a lot of my my scenes in my book. I work at a bookstore, so I have a lot of customer conversations. And some things are triggering something in my head. But like, oh, that would be a good idea for a book, or well, I'll take it to another level with it, like I always do, and put something even stranger in the book that people might not expect.
Right. Your books are definitely unpredictable. Well, you say you have a book you can give away to the first email that comes in?
Sure do. I can actually give away all three.
Oh, okay. So we'll see if we get some emails. Let me see. Do we have any emails yet? I know it's kind of early.
Corey? No, not at the moment. We don't have any emails, but I'll let you know if we do get any in.
Okay, because you'll give a book away to someone who emails in. Okay, well, how would you describe your writing style?
Ooh. Well, my readers say it's over the top. It's actually a kind of a contrast to, like, my everyday life. Like, I'm pretty introvert as a person. I didn't really know I had, like, such a wild imagination. I guess they say it's always the quiet one, and that's true with me. I could say over the top. Some would call it raunchy. But I like to say that it's dramatic, it's overly dramatic. It helps me get the point across. Like, a lot of times I read a lot of books, and sometimes, like, you're reading it, and they have a message in the story, but I just don't get it. And when I write it, it's kind of, I want to punch to it. Like, you have to, like, feel it. When you read it, you're like, wow. I just read an email today on Facebook where a young lady actually told me she learned a lot from reading my book. And I know people learn stuff from reading, but sometimes when you actually hear someone saying it, it makes a bigger difference. And at first, I kind of didn't want to write over the top, as they say, and crazy stuff anymore. I wanted to mellow it out. And I kind of thought that I did with this one, but no, as you can see with the reviews, they said I didn't. They said I took it up a notch, which I don't believe because it's not as much. There's almost no sex in this book. And not as much cursing from the first two. But, you know, I guess, yeah, over the top probably would describe my my writing style. But I try my best to use realistic themes. I just embellish a little bit more than people would like.
Well, the thing I remember from the first book of yours, when I said is that my jaw was just sitting on the floor like, what? And I say, I'm an older woman. I never heard of none of this stuff. I didn't know people did things like this.
Well, believe it or not, Ms. Maxine, it's actually a lot of those things from that first book. After people have read it, like I said before, my first interview, I got a lot of confessionals of men and women with their stories, and it made those things in my books kind of look like little fairy tales, because people would tell me things that were really, really, really terrible. Right? And I would have to tell them, like, don't tell me anymore. Like, I don't want to hear that. Really, it's like, once you, it's kind of like when you as an author, you kind of open the door for people to, like, they think they know you, I guess, or they can trust you. So they begin to tell you stuff. And, I mean, personally, I don't mind, you know, because I have, God bless me, with an ear. I'm a person that can listen, a listener or whatever. But, I don't know. I think I'm going to, I don't know.
Just keep on doing what you're doing. It's
I
good
try.
To be
I mean,
a good listener, and I'm going to tell you some of my best little plot twist. Tell me. I have a million stories in my head that
don't we all?
I've made from people telling me things. I know. And because a lot of things were told to me in confidence, I twisted up.
Right.
And then it's people that very few of my friends, people, you know, by me having people I did counseling with, so many of them told me. I would know sometimes all the family secrets. People would tell me so many things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm beginning to mine those things now, because when you're in it, when you're working in a human resource type of job, you're too burnt out sometimes to even write it. But one step away, I'm beginning to realize all these different stories, and they haven't. So it's been some time now. It's past 14 years since I last worked on the job. It's still, these stories are apropos, and then I was able to pick up a lot of younger voices.
Mm-hmm.
Editing a lot of urban fiction, and now more and more people are coming to me for the urban fiction. And so it's nothing wrong with hearing the stories, you know, just as long as you don't let them weigh you down. I think you can exercise them and get rid of the demons when you
write. Oh, I have. just a little bit.
Yeah, when you write it out, then that kind of releases that demon. So, I mean, because people are doing some sick stuff now. That's all I can say. Your book, you got some sick characters. And people.
Right. It is. Yes. And, I mean, you know, Miss Maxine, I kind of like, when my best friend, when they read my first book, they were like, whoa, people going to think this stuff happened to you. And I'm like, I kind of say, okay, like, let them think that. I mean, as long as I know what the truth is. So I kind of go with that whole mantra when it comes to writing the difficult stuff, writing the stuff that people wouldn't dare to write or even dare, like, talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I ain't going to say that it's easy, because sometimes it's like, whoa, like, I can't write this. But at the same time, it's like, why not?
Yeah.
We see it on the news. We see it and read it in the paper, on Facebook. We read it everywhere. Like, a lot of these crazy things are happening. And I don't write it. A lot of times people get confused with me with the reason why I write them. I don't write them as for entertainment. Yes, I want the stories to be entertaining, but it's more informative. That a lot of times we don't know what's really going on around us. And we kind of have that tunnel vision. Even though we see the bad things happening, like, we stay in our houses and on our block, we don't pay attention to what's going on. I mean, we can't pay attention to what's going on next door, but, like, sometimes if we would just open our eyes and actually look, we would actually see some things that we haven't really seen before.
Right. We need to pay attention, because you never know. It's sort of like the movie For Color Girls, for Color Girls, where it went into, you know, that the women was being abused and then her children end up killed. And
yes.
Because people were sitting there every day and didn't see what was going on around them.
Right. You know, and it's like, and a lot of times people actually, some people see it, but they don't say anything. It's like, well, that's not any of my business. When, you know, I kind of like, I'm only 33, but I kind of like when you say it takes a village to raise a child, they don't have that anymore. It's like, that is non-existent. It's, you're on your own with your children and your offspring and your family. It's all, everyone's for themselves. That's absolutely not true. When we're actually made to help each other.
Too many of us aren't, and too many people are alienated and alone in the world. And so many people now die alone. They say that they're even having, because of the economy, a lot of people are being buried. The family just leaving them in the morgue. They're being left in the morgue. Nobody's got any money to even do a cremation. It's sad because people don't have insurance anymore because of the job loss. So.
Right.
It is important about having a village, and that's what I kind of see in your characters, that they're all kind of marginalized, they're all kind of alienated, and that has come from living in the big cities.
Right. It's like this whole world is, we live in a big world. They say, oh, it's a small world after all, but it's really big when you have issues and you have problems that seems so much bigger than you. It makes you feel so small.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you like where can you get this help from? First of all, if you have certain type of issues that the world sees as taboo or you can't talk about, those things, like, you have to hold those in and fast doing. Me and my best friend were at a gas station one time, and we seen a young man. This guy had to be about 23, 24. And when I say he had mental issues, it was extreme. He was really young, talking to himself, people get trauma as a child. Those things, mental snaps, aren't just for older people. Those mental snaps happen to all of us, anybody.
All right, and we see so many people now that are homeless, that are mental health patients, but they cut down a lot of the mental health facilities, and so these people just wander in the street, and a lot of them are very young people, and that's what's sad too.
Yes.
And we don't have enough people that care, and you're right, we do need to help each other, and sometimes we can help each other through a book. Sometimes
we
can arouse the reader's interest where they feel like, well, maybe I can go out and volunteer. Maybe I can help. Even if I'm not a social worker, I can go work at the soup kitchen. I can go volunteer.
Right. It doesn't take much to help somebody. It just doesn't. Even, like, I get told a lot at church, a smile, a hug, or a handshake, or something could change somebody's mindset, could change somebody, what they're thinking, what they might be thinking about doing.
Right. Because a lot of people are suicidal now, and just a kind word can maybe turn them around.
Yes, ma'am.
It's something. Well, is there going to be a part four? Let's talk about it.
I can honestly say that I am thinking about it. I actually sat down and wrote some notes down maybe a week ago. And it's possible. I have some ideas, but it won't be my next book, I can say that. I have two more books coming out before that, I know.
Okay, what's your next book?
I actually have an anthology called Don't Ask, Don't Tell, under Urban Books. It's about the Army policy, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that was just abolished in September by President Obama. But, yes, it's me and three other authors, Terry Hill, Tina McKinney, and Brenda Hansen. It comes out end of February.
Okay, great. And what's the other book that you're in?
The one I'm just about finished, I have maybe 30, 40 pages left. It's called Clean Up Man. It's one of my most challenging books yet because it's only one point of view.
Yeah,
I've never done
hard.
One point of view.
It's hard because you have to make it interesting. But this one character has to bring everybody to you, but you can only see what they can see.
Right. And it's I like the character. I attach to the character. Like I said, actually this book that I'm writing now was actually a short story that I was asked to do, but then the project got reneged, so I just revamped the story and made it a full length.
Mm.
The Clean Up Man is actually, like, it's really fun. He's a guy, he's a carpenter. He's a not Kowalski. What is he? He's actually a my father. My father was actually one of those guys that went. He had like projects. He fixed people houses up. Contract. He was a private contractor. This is what this guy is. I actually kind of liked the job, so my father made it seem so cool. So I decided to use one of my characters and make him a carpenter since I knew things about it, just a little bit. Anyway, he's kind of it's still kind of a down-low-ish kind of book, but this one actually touches on absentee fatherism and identity crisis.
Sounds good, and you know that song, The Clean Up Woman, so...
Yeah, that's where I got it from.
Yeah, because I was thinking of how they would always say that the clean up woman, how she come and take your man.
Right. It's a little different. I spent it a little bit differently, but that's where I got my idea from, kind of. It's kind of, it's cool. I like this guy. This guy is really nice, but he is a bad side, but... It's kind of hard to say. I don't want to give anything away. But I like the storyline. Part of the storyline is true. I can't say who I got it from. But part of it is true. Just a smidget of it is true. But like I said, I'm almost finished that one right now. Kind of, I'm on the last leg for that one. And actually, this book I actually broke down into three separate parts. And that was something that was new for me, too. Kind of giving us a beginning, middle, and an end.
Well, that's good. When you know, as a writer, we've got to always be trying to top and raise the bar from what we wrote last. Try to do something.
Yeah. It is hard, okay?
I know. It's hard. Like you have to keep challenging yourself because the readers are going to be unforgiving if you start throwing warmed over, leftover things that you already did. You've got to come up with something fresh, something unique, with a new twist.
And I like this story, like I said, because like you said, it has to be original, it has to be fresh. I haven't heard of it before yet. Even with the genre that I'm in, I haven't really heard it. Like, we have a lot of, it can be compared to, Michael Bay's The Maintenance Man, but it's not quite like that. It's a little bit more different than that. I have a couple of stories that are underlining in it, and that's what I like when I write. It's not just one flat story. It has a couple of other stories, because this guy has a best friend who's actually straight, and you don't see that often in stories. A gay male with a straight best friend that they're not attracted to.
That's interesting. And so that's what you need. You have, and I don't like when they stereotype gay people. I like to have a gay man that's, if he's going to be in a story, I like to see his humanity. I don't want to just see the gayness. That's not the only
thing. That's, I see you preaching to the choir.
Yeah, that's what I like with your book, that, you know, one guy was an attorney and, you know, you don't want them to be the kind that, oh, everybody can just see them and they flaming. Everybody's not flamboyant, you know.
Right. And I made this character. He's actually, he's a regular guy. Like, when you see him, I mean, I had a picture of him in my head, but I can't really describe him, but he's an everyday guy. He's an everyday Joe. He's not extra muscular. He's just, he's a regular guy.
Right. He's not flaming where people would say,
no.
Oh,
no, but he can be. He has that side, but you don't see that.
Okay. Well, that's you know, it's good when writers go against the grain and do things, go against character type. Don't write, because what happens, you start seeing so many copycats, you start seeing so many, you know, at first people were comparing you to Elin, but I think you go into some different territory than Elin.
Right. And actually, you know, speaking of that, I've kind of tried not to be compared to him, because even though he's the same type of genre, to people kind of say we apples and oranges, he was classical and eloquent, and I'm outlandish and over the top or whatever. But, I mean, I liked his story, but I like mine as well. And I don't want to say that I'm not like him, because I guess we have some similarities, But when I went into this, I didn't say I was going to be the next Ina Harris or the next Paul Weber or the next person. It's hard enough to be me on a daily basis. I don't want to be living up to somebody else's standards.
Right.
Or somebody else's whatever. But I like my writing style. I like and like I said, I like other people's writing styles too. I read a lot, but I like mine. I'm happy with mine.
Right. Don't try to be anybody different. That's what helps with writers, because some of the books I'm reading now that are by the other, I would call them more the critics or people who are strong readers and agents. I can give one, for example, Donald Moss's book, Fire and Fiction. He's saying, what is going on? There's so many writers now sending in books that are rewrites of Jane Eyre or rewrites of Jane Austen. They've rewritten the characters from her book. Say, don't we have something to say from the new millennium?
Right.
What is it that writers are no longer trusting their own voice and their own fire and their own passion? So that's what I like. And you're on the right track. That's right. Because I notice if it's not something that really fires me up, my book won't even move. The muse will just sit back and say, uh-uh. It's got to be something different for you. It's
exactly.
Got to be something that I care about. You can't write about what you don't care about.
That's so true.
And I think that's what's good with your writing, that you're writing about things, and you're bringing the characters to life, even if it's a little satire, a little bit over the top sometimes, a little bit outrageous. But people do crazy things. Some of it, even when it's over the top, a lot of times I can see people doing this because people... We see it on these talk shows and reality shows. People just as crazy as a moon now.
Right. They're just out there. But if you're not, these things, you know, a lot of over-the-top things happen. They just never were talked about.
Right.
They were pushed under the rug.
Yeah, and people used to say everything had to be hush-hush. We don't want to talk. We don't want to know. We don't want people to know we got this going on in our family or that we know people like this. But that's why your books are hitting a chord with people. And tapping into something that they can relate to.
Right. Or are they glad they can?
Right.
I have a lot of people that's like, wow, I like the story, but I'm glad I don't know anybody like this. And that's a good thing for me, because it shows me that I'm not doing run-of-the-mill.
Right. And you got to be original and do what. That's why we all have a different DNA. And
yes,
we need to do what is our DNA and what our spirit. Say, you know, one of the exercises they have in my writer's book called The Artist's Way by Julius Cameron, it says that you go on a week of fast from reading so that you, and even from watching TV or reading the newspaper, so that you're not influenced by anybody, anything, and you can hear your own thoughts and get quiet within yourself.
Right, right. Actually, speaking of that, I actually, as a writer now, I used to be, a really avid reader. I think, maybe 2 years ago, I was probably reading maybe 100 books a year. Now, I think I read maybe 7 this year. They were all good. They were all really good books, but it was just having the time to actually read, it kind of gets burnt out when I have to read another person's book. And then read mine.
Right.
Cause somebody's not going to get read
too.
Right. And I'm at to the point now where I almost hate reading my book after it comes back to me that third time for editing, right? Because I don't want to read it again.
I know you get sick of it, but that's just part of what I do. I do most of my reading when I'm writing and editing, but after the book comes out, I kind of don't read them as much, and then I might read parts here. I'll pick it up and open parts and read it here and there, the different books, because I have 10 that's up on Amazon, but I actually have 14 books that I've written now, and I'm just 7. You know, I think once I write them, I put them out to the world. It's like sending your children out to the world. You have to detach and let go with love. You cannot hold your books.
Right.
Read them over and over, and I do believe in reading. I try to read from other cultures, read from different people. It's helped me as a writer and an editor. But also, I think I am going to just take a break from reading for a while and see what that'll help, you know, with my book. And sometimes I like to just shut down and write real fast and go on a writing marathon. We have the National Writers Writing Month coming up in November, the NaNoWriMo something.
Right, I saw
write
that.
The novel in a month, so.
Ooh, I don't know.
Right, now, you know, this just to get to about 50,000 words, and then badly written words, but just to get it down. So I'm going to join them again this year. I joined them last year, but I had too many distractions going on to do it. So that might be a thing. How long have you ever written in one sitting? Because some writer last week, T. Styles, was saying that she has written sometimes 16 hours. And I know writers who do that.
I can honestly say I have adult ADHD, just unprescribed, unmedicated. Okay? If I could sit down and write for 2 hours, that is excellent. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm a fast typer. So the max I can get done, I probably can do 5,000 words in 3 hours if I'm, like, in that zone. I mean, it has to be nothing on. No distractions. That's kind of rare right now.
Right. And you work in a bookstore still, right?
Yeah. That's actually, believe it or not, that's where I get most of my writing done. I cannot write at home. Mm. It's like, it's almost impossible.
So when you're at work and you have a break between customers, you're able to, you have your laptop with you or something?
Yes. I carry my laptop every day, everywhere.
Okay. Have you ever written at Starbucks? I just recently started going to Starbucks, and I see a lot of writers.
No, but actually, I tried last week. I actually said I'm not going to. I usually get up at around 4:30, and I don't. I go straight home. But I said, I was hungry, and I went to P.F. Chang's to sit down and eat, and took my laptop out and typed for like an hour.
Great.
And that actually helped. Like, it was a different setting, it was peaceful, and I said I might try that again, but P.F. Chang's is kind of expensive.
All right. But it's good for you to try different places to write. That's what I like to use the show to get ideas from other writers for how they manage their writing life. How do they do their research? And you mentioned your research that you talked to a friend that came from California.
I actually have, like, writer friends, like, two writer friends that are on Urban. I don't really share a whole bunch, like ideas with a whole bunch of authors, but I do have two friends that write for Urban Books that we talk. We have to bounce ideas off of each other, because I mean, I can't write my books all by myself. I have to, like, I'm not full of everything, so I can't just get all the ideas from me all the time. Or their ideas might trigger something in my head, and that actually helps. It's kind of cool. Like, it's like. It's like mentoring each other. We're all authors, but we still need mentoring from each other.
Great. It's like having readers. Are they your readers as well?
No. we do read each other's stuff like before they come out. But I do have a couple of readers, like the people that I work with, in the stores. Now I have a couple of customers that maybe one or two that are trustworthy that I can let them read a whole manuscript. But they're not going to be there. A lot of times I say, could you find mistakes for me or tell me if something's wrong? But that almost never happens. It's always, oh my gosh, that was so good, and that's all I get.
Yeah, that's the bad thing when it's just a reader. Now, they can be unforgiving and they can be critical, but basically they're not trained like an editor. So you
right. Now, a guy that one of my readers I actually clicked with on Facebook. He's actually really good with. He broke my characters down my first book. You would have thought he was a psychiatrist, and these were really real people. I mean, he literally broke down every single character. Right. So I was like, okay, God, you're really funny. So from now on, he gets to read my stuff, and he actually says, well, this might not work. You might want to change this and fix this. And he does it all for free because he said he just loved doing it. He liked my work with my mind, and he just likes to do it. He'll read it, and he'll give comments on the side, you know. And he said he loves to do it for free. And I only have one person that does that, and that's kind of, like, cool. He's really, really cool guy.
Good. Well, that's good because it really helps. Have you ever tried a writer's group? I've been in one for 20 years. It's almost become just more like dysfunctional family.
No, I've never tried that. I actually don't know where to go at, to be honest. I haven't seen anything like that, like for Maryland.
Well, they have two that I go to. One I haven't been to, but it's one that they bring in great speakers, and they bring a lot of people from Hollywood, and it's grown to about 50 people. It's the Greater Los Angeles Writers Society, and that's GLAWS.com. You can find them online for people who want. I don't know if you have to be in the L.A. area to be a member, but it has really grown, so that's another one. But, you know, just kind of search, because it's good when you're around writers, and then they bring in different, it's a whole different energy, too.
Right.
But let me see. I'm surprised we didn't get any emails. Did we get any emails yet?
No, not yet.
Okay.
But, yeah, I will chime in if we do receive any.
Okay, because we're coming near the top of the hour, but I'm glad I had a chance to talk to you without a lot of interruptions anyhow. So, what do you think about e-books? Let me...
Let's talk
of the town. Let's talk about
eating. Right. I have two points of view because I have two different jobs. As a bookstore owner, a bookstore manager, I almost absolutely hate it.
Right.
Right.
It's affected the book sales.
Right. I'm not gonna say it's like drastic, because it's not drastic, but it could get there. I have a lot of readers that are diehard book readers. They do books. And I have some that do e-books and paperbacks. But as a writer, I'm like, that's really good. Like, it's more money. They can't return even e-books. So it's kind of good. It's kind of good and bad for me. Like, it's like my bread and butter. Not gonna say killing my bread and butter, but it's affecting my bread and butter. But then, you know, on the side, this is like my little, I don't want to say hobby, but I don't want to say career either.
Right. Well, some writers are claiming they've made 100-some thousand in 5 months or something. I read on. And they gave the writer's name, too.
Do you think that's realistic?
Well, this is one that had 5 books. And he had a series that was at the tipping point. Now, I'm not saying this was in the urban genre. This is
thriller.
They say thrillers are selling like 48% of most of the books now. E-books, people like crime thrillers and so forth. So I think that was the case too. And this was
were they 99-cent books?
I think they were $2.99, where you make $2 a book.
Right. It makes a difference when that price is the way they are for me, and I'm kind of glad that my publisher isn't like... I see my prices fluctuate on my e-books by nickels. But I'm so glad my publisher didn't like just say, oh, your book is old, we're gonna drop it down to $3. Because I don't want sales off of the price. I want sales off of the material, like being good material.
Right.
And like earlier today, my book was at $1,400 on Kindle.
Oh.
And $14,000, which is really good for me. That's actually like some of the popular books that I sell for 99 cents and $2.99. are up there too. That makes me feel kind of good that I'm actually selling my book for $7 and some change, and I'm actually ranking with the ones that are doing peak numbers or close to big numbers for I don't want to say pennies, but for a lot less.
Right. So, you know, it's writers have to balance it out. I think if you do the 99-cent one, it should be either something that's real old
or real short.
Real short.
Right. I said that to myself. I was thinking about putting something up, like a short story or two that I had written. But it wouldn't be, I wouldn't put anything up there for 99 cents that's over 10 pages. Because, I mean, maybe a little bit more than that, but I just don't think that that it's necessary for me to put something that I put a lot of time into and effort into to give it away. Basically, because after a dollar, you're making, what, 36 cents, 33 cents, something like that.
Well, that's almost what you make even with the publishers in mass market. You don't get that much either. So,
right.
It just depends on if you're selling a whole lot.
Right. Yeah. It kind of adds up.
If you're selling a billion, then it adds up.
But most people aren't doing that. They might say this. If they sell 1,000 books at 99 cents, that's only $300. That's a lot of selling.
Yeah,
and a lot of people are peaking. They're thinking that those peak numbers at 1,000 are excellent. When in actuality, no. My first book did over 6,000 in the first 2 months, and that's paperback.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you want definitely more. Well, I'm sure it went back to print because.
Oh yeah, it did. It's going to be a four. I think four right now. Four print run four.
Okay, good.
Right. Yeah, but it's cool. I like it. I love the ebook revolution. I'm going to participate one day with my own. a lot of people ask me, "Well, do you think you're ever going to self-publish a full novel?" I don't know. They asked me if I'm going to publish someone else, and I said, "Definitely not." I don't believe that me as a person, or I'm not going to speak for everybody. That if you only have a book or two out, maybe three. You shouldn't be publishing anybody else,
right?
Personally, because you really don't. Even though some people even tell me that, oh, you're so good and you're so seasoned and you're this and you're that, I don't believe that. I'm not going to get you that place where I think that I just got it, you know. And then I'm bringing up somebody else on board when I'm still trying to hang on and catch on and get the next niche and the next follower, you know.
That makes sense. A lot of people do jump up and do it prematurely, but I planned to publish other people 14 years ago, so I finally have done it. I have a book called The Miraculous Power of Massage by Van T. Womack, and I have an upcoming book by the first, where it was two African-American women who became federal marshals, U.S. marshals, in 1973, and I'm doing a memoir for her. Her name is Joanne Neely. But this is I've learned how to edit. I've learned how to write back covers. You know, this is 14 years of experience. So you're right. This is something that you really have to kind of know people. I know graphic designers now. And I'm glad it didn't happen before now.
Right.
And I know how to help market their books where they can't market. And The Miraculous Power of Massage is already getting ready to go into his fourth printing because he's, you know, out there on the road selling.
Pushing.
Right, you have a lot to push.
People don't know that. I actually, having to work at a bookstore is kind of like, it's kind of good because my books are there every day, but I kind of wish I could get out more. Like, I'm doing more book signings now because my book is out, but like, you see a lot of people that this is their everything. They don't have any other side jobs, and their books are their life. So yeah, J.M. Benjamin, T. Styles, I'm looking at them like, wow, they like, J.M. Benjamin alone is like somebody to look at because he's always on the hustle, always on the grind. Like, he's not just a book writer. He's like a community man, too. He's always in the community. He's not just trying to make that next dollar.
Right. He's giving back to the community, and then he's publishing people too. But
right, and he got some good people coming through,
right.
Some really good ones. And he's not going to find someone to waste his money. He's just not going to do that.
Right. It's him and T. Styles. She's got some good people coming up. So a lot of people
right.
are really. Doing it, and then Wahida Clark has a publishing company too, and
yeah, she's doing it really good too.
Yeah, and her book's in New York Times, so you know it's a lot of people who are really making moves. But you're doing it right to just take your time, don't let people push. one thing before you get your toehold going first.
Right.
And so you're on the right track. But please give out your contact information.
I am available at www.facebook.com/ArthurMTPope. My email is chosen_97@yahoo.com. I have an author page on Facebook as well. Just type in Arthur M. T. Pope. I have a website, which is www.wix.com/MTPope/both sides of the fence.
Okay. What's that website again?
www.wix.com/MTPope/both sides of the fence.
Okay, well, thank you so much. You know, as you see how your books are moving, so all these things, the bookstore, the internet radio shows, do you have any appearances or any place that you're going to be?
I'm going to be doing some urbanologies in Baltimore and in D.C. in the next following week. I have something scheduled for the next 4 weeks, actually. My November calendar hasn't been made up yet, but I'm trying to get to Philly, Philadelphia, and Virginia.
Good. Are you driving there?
No, actually, I just finished driving school, so I had to juggle that one the last three weeks. So, yeah, I'm going to be driving soon, probably not until next year, probably not going to be getting heavy, but I will actually, something that's in the future, I will be doing, we have a Baltimore Urban Book Fest here. It's a new book fest that features just urban books. That I did this last year around April, and we have one coming up in May, and I already registered already, so I will be there May 6th in Baltimore, Maryland, downtown.
Okay, and did you do the Baltimore Book Festival there?
No, actually, I had kind of a release at that same day. I had a release kind of party at the library. We had a library here, and they invited me to do my book signing and a book talk there on that day.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Well, keep up the good work, and I look forward to having you back on the show when your next book come out.
Right. I appreciate it.
Okay, and hopefully I'll get to edit your next book, too.
Oh, we already made that call.
Okay, good. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you, Ms. Maxine.
All right. Thank you, and keep up the good work. Congratulations.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Please return next week to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. We're going to have Tamika Newhouse, best-selling author and CEO of Delphine Publications. Have a great week. Love you all. Bye-bye.